coming up right now, a little chat with my friend Mary Burdett. Known her for 10-plus years. She is the executive director at Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival. And as I've, if you've been listening, I've been playing music from bands that will be at this year's 2024 Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival. That will continue throughout the rest of the program. Again, it's not every band that's going to be there because that would be impossible. But we're going to talk to Mary Burdett about the festival. It's just a neat progression of things that have happened. The uniqueness about Grey Fox, which has benefited me, I just can't even tell you how much I've gained from attending Grey Fox. What I've learned as a person, not just as someone involved in the music and maybe the putting the music out there, I've learned so much. I could talk about this forever, about how my ways of dealing with people have changed a little bit. I was never a real, you know, difficult person to get along with, but when you see what happens at Grey Fox and you see how they work things out and their effort is to solve problems, it's very amazing to me. And Mary Burdett's just an amazing person. So after we finish with Mary, we'll hear some more music from bands that will be there. Della May is there all the time. And you'll hear from a live cut, a couple live cuts from them, and Wyatt Ellis and Sister Sadie. And I'll be back to tell you about all that good stuff. Right now, let's talk to my friend Mary Burdett. To the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass, you've no doubt heard me talk about a certain festival, Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival. And it's something that I've been involved in participating in joyously for over a decade. And I will tell you this, too, to the listeners. The benefits to me from being there and seeing these artists and all these new artists inures to the listeners. I'm so fond of the way the festival is run. And the Bluegrass Festival itself is a phenomenon that I think needs a little bit of discussion because it's not like anything else. And Grey Fox, I think, is top of those. So I have on the phone today the executive director, and I think my friend, also I can call her that, Mary Burdett. How are you, Mary?
absolutely, your friend. I'm doing well, and it's great to hear from you.
Yeah, it's always
great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to hear from you. So you are right now, you're out on the other coast. You're on the West Coast.
I do. I live in Bellingham, Washington. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these days it doesn't matter where you – really doesn't matter where you live because you can do most things, you know, on a computer or, you know, get on a plane or whatever. So, yeah, it works. It works just fine for me to be out here.
You can Zoom into everybody and you can do this and you can do all these other things and you can FaceTime with people. And it's like there's no end. You can't get rid of people no matter where you are. You're going to have to
That's true. Point.
So then the festival then is in what I would call upstate New York. I want to talk about Grey Fox. I want you to a little bit about you, your involvement with Grey Fox as it's developed. And then I'm going to talk to you what I think is a general overall feel or philosophy of what I get from the Grey Fox experience. So let's talk a little bit about Mary Burdett.
Well, Grey Fox has been around for in many iterations, actually. Grey Fox and Widderhawk, and before that, the Berkshire Mountain Bluegrass Festival. They are all one festival, essentially, but with different names over the years. And that festival, Grey Fox, has been around for just about 40 years. And it was founded and directed and produced by Mary Daub for years. She just recently decided to retire and not worry about stuff at the festival anymore. So she's going to be there and be relaxing and having a good time while the three people that she selected and asked to take her place will be there slaving away, as they say. That all happened pretty much last October. And she called one day and said, you know, I've got a couple of things that I can do here. I could sell the festival to somebody I don't know. I could end the festival, and I don't really want to do that. Or I could ask three of my longtime compadres to take the helm. And she said, would you be interested? And I said, let me think about that. Yes.
Yeah, really.
you know, we were kind of wondering what she was going to do. And it was just a big relief that she has the faith in the three of us to go ahead with this festival and make it all that it can be. So we're excited. We meet every Monday for about 2 hours to grind through some stuff, and then many times during the week. So it's been an ongoing process. We feel like we're working on another master's degree, this time in festival production. But we've done this for so long, and one person is Claire Armbruster, does a lot of the production work, and Rouse B. Cusenberry does all of the site management and all of that stuff, and I kind of do all the rest.
There's a great feeling, and I want to back up. I want to say this first, and I want you to respond. I think this Bluegrass Festival thing is overall just an amazing thing that's not reproduced. There are music festivals, but Bluegrass festivals are very, very different. But here's what I want to say about Grey Fox and what I've learned over, I guess, a decade of hanging out and doing whatever I do up there. It is the most problems develop in anything, and problems develop in festivals. And at Grey Fox, every year, let's say this, every year there's improvement. And even as perfect as the festival may have been the year before, you and Claire, to a certain extent, and Rousby and also Mary Dalb and other people, you make it better. Because you, even though to the observer, somebody like me, it's like, this is the greatest thing ever. But you make improvements every year. I've not gone where I haven't found out that, well, something new's been, there's been a modification. And all these things are worked out. And even on day-to-day things, there are things that happen during a festival where there's a conflict, we'll say, and it's always resolved in a way that I just think is unique. I think the whole festival and the running of the festival is just, let's solve this problem and be done with it and make everybody happy and go on to the next one.
and that's all part of our philosophy. We want this festival to be a great, great experience for anybody who comes, whether they are, ticket buyers or children or all of the artists, the volunteers. We have about 550 volunteers on various crews. And all the guests and all of the press. And, we just want everybody to have the best time, and it does take constant tweaking, sort of like a marriage, I guess, in a way. You just kind of, check in and how's it going, and, oh, we could fix this over here, and then we go and we fix it. I always laugh when I hear that, because our site crew, if I can say this correctly, they say, the difficult we can do right away, it's the impossible that may take a while. And they one year they had shirts that said that on them. And
I wish I could found one.
Yeah.
And I've gotten to know all the crew, and some people come and go, but there are certain ones that always stay. So for the same idea, they are fixers. Short story. My first time there, I was going to broadcast live from the main stage from a feed that came off of the main stage, blah, 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 blah. So I wasn't really sure how to do that. And Bill Keith tried to help me as much as he could. And he was very helpful to me. Bill was a friend of mine by then. And so I was like, I don't know how this is going to work. So when your regular folks showed up, I said, here's the problem. And I described this problem that was insurmountable to me and even to the genius of Bill Keith. And they said, oh, we know exactly what it is, and they fixed it, and they moved on. So it's everything is addressable and fixable, which I think is so great for the people going to enjoy, because they don't have to know all these things happened. They don't have to know. It's just they just have to show up and have a good time. And I just think the whole operation of Grey Fox is that I've never seen anything like it, to where there's all these things going on, you people work nonstop, and you solve it and make it better. And it just gets better and better and more glorious, I think, for the attendees at the festival. That's just my uninvited opinion of it. But I think it's a unique thing, that I feel a vibe up there that I don't feel anywhere else.
Well, thank you. And thanks for thinking that way, because that is very much our intent. We want people to not be you know, it's sort of like, you know, if you're playing music and you have a bad sound man, you are very aware of your sound man. And but at a festival, you don't want to be aware of the crew and the, you know, in a negative way. You just want it all to happen and to sit together and roll. And that's what we strive to do.
And I'm sure that internally there are disagreements as to how to solve problems, but nobody how to solve problems. But I haven't heard of, nor have I seen, because I wander everywhere. I've not seen anybody in a situation where they're just going to leave and they're going to stomp out. I think, you know, it's solved this issue. It's fixed this now. And then there's a decision made. And from what I hear, which is nothing, grumbling, everybody seems to agree with the solution and they move on to the next thing. That, I think that's the key to it. This is done, move on to something else.
Yeah. So it's very much our intent that we, put together a festival that, you know, feels just very comfortable to everybody. And there's such a sense of community. And what long ago, it occurred to me way long ago, that I really felt like I was with my people that weren't my family, but they were just as great as family. And that and many of us were around, you know, at the same time, and we said, yeah, it's like a family reunion where you like everybody.
That's it.
Yeah. And some of those same people have been around for, you know, 30 years, and new ones come, and we're now at the point where we really do want to, you know, we're talking about attrition here, and, you know, we're training younger people to take over what we've been doing for sometimes decades. You know, for instance, I have a young gal who was a scholarship winner a couple of years ago, and she's actually taking over one of my jobs during the festival. And I love that. And we meet about once a month, and she asks me questions, and I'm very candid, and I think she's ready to do this. So it's a feeling to pass,
you know,
knowledge on.
It's a great management. Let's put this in a business. That's a great management scheme to find someone, trust them, and let them do that. Mm-hmm. You know, trust your judgment to let them do that. And then you can do other things too, but you get good people that you trust, and this is, all right, this is fine, we can do this, and you take care of that, and then you can do other things.
You know, you touched on something that Mary Dowd, who was the producer and director for so many years and founded Grey Fox, that was her whole thing. Her approach to business was like, let's find people who can do these things and let them do their thing, and, you know, and trust them to check in with you if they have a problem. And she just trusted a lot of her staff to do just that. And so it's easy for us to, you know, pick up that baton and go forward with that same kind of philosophy, I guess.
I'm talking to Mary Burdett, the executive director of Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival, and we're talking in general about the festival and just about maybe some management of people also and some other things. But and I think, too, as someone who would say your new person, who I happen to know, that person will respect the fact that you trust them. And you don't have to threaten them to do their job. You don't have to micromanage, watch what they're doing and help them be assistant. But you trust them, and they'll say, hey, they trust me to do this. So I better do the best that I can to make it fit into what their concept is of this entire festival. I think that's the reaction, because I've not seen many people that were like, you know, blah, 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 blah. There's not a lot of grumbling. It's like, because they're trusted, and the trust has been given to them, and then they do their job.
Yeah, yeah, that's how it works, and it's lovely. I mean, you know, and it pours over into the fans, and it, you know, certainly, you know, it rubs off on the fans. It pours over in, you know, onto the artists, and you know, the sponsors have a good time, the vendors, the food people that come in to sell food, they have a great time at the festival. I mean, it's everybody really, I mean, I'm thinking of broccoli people who have these outrageous costumes.
My favorite.
And I mean, everybody just has a wonderful time there. We have huge families and groups of friends who come in and set up whole huge campsites, and they have jam sessions after the, you know, the late night show is over. You can stop by and jam until, I don't know, until the cows come home.
Until you realize you have to sleep at some point.
Yeah.
And sometimes not a lot of sleeping goes on, but it's okay because you're going to get to sleep another day, but you may never get a chance to sit. And everybody wanders through. The people from the stages, there's four stages, they wander through, and they may sit in a jam session, and you're playing with one of the greatest musicians in the world.
Yeah.
In your little jam session.
You know, and bluegrass has always been that way. I play bass, and back when I was just starting out, I would go to festivals, and I would, you know, I would kind of walk around and find something simple to play with, and a group that didn't have a bass, and I would sort of say, you know, is it okay if I play with you? And they would always say yes, yeah. Always. And, you know, they would even, when I was first starting out, I was at Ralph Stanley's festival in Virginia, McClure, and there was a blind banjo player there from Washington D.C. and he kept leaning over and tuning my bass, and it was great. I just appreciated him so much. You know, I wonder what happened to him.
He was leaning over and untuning your bass.
He was tuning my bass.
Tuning it, okay.
He was tuning it, yeah, okay. Because you know, I mean, I was really green around the gills, and a very green player, and he was just, you know, helping me out, and he knew where I was because I stood next to him, and he would just lean over and reach up and
And one of the great thing too, and I'll say this because I know from my personal experience, Gray Fox operates like this, but I think it's like you said, you were at Ralph Stanley's festival. If there is a musician there that you're just like, this is my idol, it could be a banjo idol for what I'm looking for, and you say, how do you do this? They'll show you what they do. How do you do this part? I do this. You got it. You can figure it. It's just the most amazing feeling, and you walk away thinking, that was this person actually, this person who I admire and almost revere for their skill. They're like, oh yeah, here, just do it this way. And you think, wow, what a cool thing. Let me, we've talked about festivals in general and talked about Gray Fox, but let's talk about the physical, aspect of Gray Fox, which I find amazing. It's a really flat area. Then there's a stage up on the hill, it's run like a city. I mean, there's water. It's a real unique way of making sure there's water and water pressure. It's like you're living in a small city for a while. It's everything's right there.
Yeah, it's a little town that just sort of crops up. It really pops. It's a pop up. It's a pop up city that, you know, it happens once a year, and you know, and then it goes away, and it's in a large hay field. It's on a hay farm, and I don't know exactly how many acres it is, but it's a lot, and there's a very easy flat camping down below, in a very large field that's surrounded by a creek, you know. And what some people don't realize is that when you look at it from the this was going to be our new site, I looked at it and I went, holy cow. How did that happen? It's very cool.
This is preordained from somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, and then there's this big flat area, and then there's this little up incline that goes up to the main, where the main stages are, and then it sort of plateaus off again, and it's another camping area.
Yeah,
and where People go up there, they drop their stuff off, and then they take their cars and park in our car corral. But in our regular campground, people can come in. They purchase a parking pass, and they can park right at their campsite. And a lot of festivals aren't like that. You have to, you know, you're going to do your camping one place, and your car is, I don't know, maybe a half a mile away or something. And at our festival, people's cars are right there, so you can store your valuables in there.
All of these things and more, and there's like a, I guess I would call it a, well, there's a flat area with food, and there's things to do as you walk in. There's stuff for children. There are specific tents set up for activities for children. There are exercise. Sometimes in the early mornings, there's a stage that if you want to do yoga or you want to do meditation, there's all these things that are family-oriented, and you can always find something to do. If you go with a family and you have kids, you can find things for them to do, and then they have stages where they can watch music and performances that are geared more toward younger people. I mean, it just never stops. Everywhere you look, there's something specialized if somebody wants it.
Yeah, the family stage is a great place. It runs Thursday through Sunday, and Friday and Saturday nights when the sun goes down, there are movies for kids. And all during the day, there are performances, there are crafts, there are dances, there's actually family yoga. You can, bring your mom and dad and do a little bit of yoga. And everything's it's kind of shortened up for kids, attention span. Mm-hmm. So they're not very long exercises, but there are a lot of activities. I would say that one of the most popular things is that kids bring shirts from home or, bandanas or whatever they want to dye, some small item. And we have tie-dyeing lessons and an activity on Thursday night.
I'm going to learn how to do that. I'm gonna bring a shirt because I've always wanted to tie-dye. I didn't know I could be a child. I'm childlike, but I'm going to go find out how to get involved because I want to see how you do that. I've always wanted to do that.
Yeah. Thursday night around 7 o'clock is when that happens.
I'll be there. I'll find it. And so not only, as we described, kind of like an arcade where you walk down and there's all this different food, the stuff you would never find. And then there are vendors. And by vendors, I mean, it could be instrument salesmen. It could be books. It could be clothing. So there's a whole area of vendors who have if you want a new instrument, they probably sell them one somewhere, different manufacturers and different vendors. And so you can do a lot of tent shopping. You can buy something there if you want to and just find out, and talk. And usually the people that are manning the vending areas are the people that actually run the company and know what they've made and can explain to you what goes into it, a dobro or a guitar or a fiddle. They're right there.
Yeah, a lot of it might be a tuner company or a pick company.
Yeah.
And they have these little tents, and they're set up in their booths, and you go in there and hang out. I know that, let's see, who is it? I think it might be D'Addario, always has a nice booth, and there's always a jam section.
Yeah, for the people listening, D'Addario makes strings for everything, so... just so you know, there's a pick, there's Blue Chip Pick is always there. Somebody else, and Matthew Gullins is a friend of mine, Blue Chip Pick, there's all sorts of different things. So you got strings, picks, instruments, and you were mentioning that at the D'Addario, they actually have people playing and performing, and it's just like, it's a big, Mary, it's a big festival. That's what it is. It's a big festival.
And a new thing that we're doing this year is... right where we have sort of two lanes or two paths of vendors, basically, and where they come together, at that corner, the New Belgium Bells Brewing Company has this thing that they call their gig rig. And this year they're actually going to be, you can get a beer there and then go into their gig rig and have a seat and listen to a variety of bands who will be playing pretty much in the late afternoon every day. So that'll be really fun.
Go ahead.
So we have another thing that we have is to encourage young people to get into bluegrass, and to we're finding that we have this emerging artist showcase, and we have each year we have about 6 different bands from around the country. This year we actually have one from Korea as well. And they're the winners of the International Bluegrass Performance Grant. And so they entered this contest and they won. And they have a stipend to go to festivals, to travel. And then each festival that they go to also pays them. And they'll be with us all weekend long. They're called Country Gong Bang. Really good.
I've seen a performance of theirs, not live, but I saw it on a video.
Yeah, really good. They're one of our emerging artists. We have a group from Arizona, a couple from Massachusetts and North Carolina. So they do come from all over, and it's an application process. We get their applications, and about 75 bands every year vie for these 6 positions and 6 slots, and it's really hard to pick them out, but we finally, we've got a system, and we finally come to the right decision every year.
and just a reminder, I'm talking to Mary Burdett, executive director of Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival. You get the artists that everybody knows off the tip of their brain, and then you bring in all these other out of the country, Irish and you name it, mm-hmm. all these different bands that come in that maybe you haven't seen before, and they're good or they wouldn't be there. I'll tell you, here's an interesting thing. I always thought that several years ago, Grey Fox signed a young guy that people kind of, he'd been there once before with another guy performing, but signed Billy Strings, who was, not that well known then. And he was an artist in residence for like 2 years, and now you can't buy a ticket for the guy. I'm not saying it's because of Grey Fox, could be, but you see him, you could be right there and see him, and now he's doing things in bluegrass world that's never been done, selling out night after night after night in different cities, in the same city, in huge venues, and that's something you might see at Grey Fox. Lightning strikes, and they bring in somebody like that, and it's like, who is this guy? Oh, wait a minute, I remember him from, and now he's the most the greatest entertainer. According to Rolling Stone, he was entertainer of the year not long after that. So I just think that's kind of neat that that stuff is possible there.
Yeah, and we that's another thing that is an intent of ours, intentionally designed. We designed the festival that way because we love that. I mean, we love, for instance, we have Wyatt Ellis coming this year. I think he's 14.
Yeah.
And has been on the Grand Ole Opry, and is bringing his band, and he's just shredding it wherever he's going, and he's another person to really keep your eye on. Really remarkable. And this year we've kind of branched out, and we have a couple of bands from Ireland and one from Quebec. And the Korean band. So we love to bring in the international flavor. And then we also have this wonderful blues guitar, acoustic blues guitarist, whose name is Charlie Parr. And I just want to say, you really should see him. He's great.
Well, that's the kind of thing that I like to veer off onto. Sometimes I disappear and I'm at different stages, and seeing people like that, it's just like, well, this is just, I'm so glad. Like now I have a new person to follow and a new person to find their music and tell other people about.
And that's, it's just the way of Grey Fox, is to bring new people in and who may not have been seen by bluegrass fans before, or who might not have been seen in the Northeast before.
Right,
so,
right.
Got those couple of things going for us.
The festival grounds, we've talked about a little bit. It's in Oak Hill, New York, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
And
very close to Albany, New York.
Yes. Yes. Owned, I think, is the land owned by Walsh? Is it Walsh?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. John Walsh Sr.
And here's a neat story about that. And I wanted to get the name right. I don't mean to interrupt you, but if you're mm-hmm. at the festival and you're up on that higher level and you look up, you'll see at the top of another ridge, kind of like a very, very very decorated. If you go up there, there's it's like you're in somebody's living room, and it's the Walsh family, and I've gotten to know him very well, and mm-hmm. The whole family comes there. They've told me this is their Christmas. The whole family comes from all over the world, and this is their Christmas and family celebration. So you got, and they're coming in and have something. It's a nice big area at the top of the ridge, and they absolutely love it. This is the greatest, and this is the owners of the property. They're so thrilled. And it is. It's their family reunion Christmas. They've described it all rolled into one.
Yes, and they're very much an Irish family, and we are located in a area of New York State that's actually has been known for years as the Irish Alps, because so many of the people who live in Greene County, immigrated from Ireland. And which is why we also bring in a couple of bands from Ireland each year, mm-hmm. to celebrate where we are, our terroir, I guess you'd call it, the area of New York State where we are. Yeah.
There's a great website for Grey Fox. You can Google that easily. The festival begins July 16th.
17th.
All right. I'll probably be there the 16th because I get there early. So it goes through the 17th, from the 17th through that following Sunday. And there are schedules out to look at. There are schedules there to see everybody's going to be there and what's going to be happening. There's a lot of stuff going on, and it's just a magic place to me. And that's why I like to go. And I'll be there this year, and I'll be finding something to do. I know I have some tasks to do when I get there, which I'm very happy to perform. And I also talk to as many artists as I can. And then as I say, that comes back to this program. So I go up there. Yes, it's wonderful, but I also get more information and more artist exchange. And then I bring it back to this program on Real Bluegrass, which I think is a benefit to everybody that listens.
Yeah. You and a lot of other people, I've always thought of it as sort of like putting your finger in a socket and getting re-energized. And I've always felt that way about going to Grey Fox and just coming back, like, are my feet touching the ground? Because it was just such a great time. And I think a lot of people feel that way.
I love that analogy, but I will say this as a products liability lawyer. I can't imagine the feeling being one of relief of sticking your – you must be a magic electrical socket. Because most people don't come away, I get it, though. You're getting that little extra spark. So, well, Mary, I can't wait to see you again. I'm so happy you had time to talk about changes and things that are still going on at Grey Fox. And I just think it's one of a kind. And you helped me put some words to describe how I try to define it to other people. So you, from that ground up and 40 years of experience, have helped me frame it a little bit easier so that people can understand what I think is just the grandeur of what goes on there. I'm amazed every year.
Well, thanks. And it's nice to hear other people talk about Grey Fox the way that I think about it, too. And that's how I feel like that's how your representation of Grey Fox is very similar to what I try to tell people,
yeah,
too. So,
yeah, I think yeah. So. All right. Mary Burdett, yeah. Go back and walk your dog or do whatever you're doing, and I will talk to you again probably before the beginning of the festival, and I'll certainly see you up there. I'll find you, okay?
Yeah? Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thank you,
thanks
Mary.
Thanks so much. All right. Bye-bye.
That's Mary Burdett, and really trying to put some words to describe this phenomenon as I feel it is. Great job. You have to listen to her voice and the devotion and the love that generates from her attention to the details of Grey Fox. I want to tell you one quick story that I didn't mention with Mary, although she would have remembered it. First couple of years that I went there, I get up early. It's a huge festival farm. I get up early and walk around. The grass is dewy. There's still a little mist floating around. I like that. I like to get up and and just kind of wandered around. And I used to notice a gentleman with a large plastic bag, small guy, very agile. He would run around the entire facility up through all the seats and pick up every aluminum can and everything that he could recycle. And he did it really well. He was really good at it. I spoke to him once because he saw me every morning and just chatted. And he collected them all, took them back down to the entrance to the farm, and he had these giant bags that he would ride, carry on his bike, and then go to the recycling place and turn them in. And that was what he did. And I will tell you, I've seen the bike with the bags on it, and it would be easier for a rich man to go through the eye of a needle than it would for this fellow to go through an eye of a needle with all the bags of cans that he had on his bicycle. I don't even know how he rode it. So he would come and you know, he would just show up and do all this and be gone. And somehow it must have gotten the attention of the management, not in a bad way, but here's how Gray Fox solved this problem. They made him a crew member. They gave him a crew member's shirt, which just made it easier for him to go around and collect cans. Now, there's recycling bins everywhere. They're very much environment conscious, but why not let this guy do it? So here's what they did. It wasn't really a problem. Maybe somebody said, hey, this guy took his can right from under his chair. I didn't care. It'd be great if he did that. They made him a crew member, and they gave him a shirt, and he instantly had access to everything and benefited everybody. That's a small story, but kind of explains a little bit how they deal with issues up at Gray Fox. It's a very special place to me. Thank you so much, Mary Burdett, and the entire crew at Gray Fox, and thank you for tuning in.